Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that carries on, trying to bring a little light to a world few of us born after World War II have had to endure. We do that by embracing art, an act that has, over the millennia, helped humanity survive the very worst of social calamities. On this show, our art of choice is cinema, and at times that means the kind of cinema that challenges both our senses and our emotions, which is the case this week as we'll discuss the Chinese noir, The Wild Goose Lake, the crime character study Bad Education, and the working class nightmare explored by British director Ken Loach in Sorry We Missed You. Let's begin with a trek to a part of China that even the local authorities are afraid to go. The city of Wuhan, China, has been in the news since the COVID-19 outbreak was determined to have started there. It's providential, then, that writer-director Jiao Yinan chose to set his film, The Wild Goose Lake, in and around Wuhan, a city surrounded by lakes and one, at least according to one of the film's characters, that boasts area beyond the reach of the law. Diao follows two major characters, the mid-level gangster Zhu and Liu, a mysterious bathing beauty, a term you need to think of as set off in quote marks. Just released from prison, Zhu finds himself in bad straits when, attempting to fend off the challenge from younger, ambitious criminals, he becomes embroiled in a showdown that leaves him wounded and the target both of the police and of rivals who are after the reward that has been placed on his head. Following the theme and tone of classic U.S. noir films of the 1940s and 50s, The Wild Goose Lake is all about struggle, betrayal, and sudden death. But in Diao's hands, it's also about striking visual beauty.
Right. I think when we're talking about this movie, I think it's the images that are created here that I think are going to be at the forefront. And I want to call out the cinematographer. His name is Jing Song Dong. And I mean, just the neon color scheme of so many scenes in this movie, the shadows of the places as they're kind of creeping through the night, trying to evade capture, the elaborate tracking shots that happen. There's a scene in this movie where the main female character is trying to follow someone while also evading violence. And it's this really elaborate, I'm sure it was done with special effects, but it's this really elaborate choreographed sequence that I just thought was incredible. And I think you're right to point out the noir plot that's going on here, because it's a pretty standard noir plot. You've got the guy that's on the run, the people that are going after him and are kind of selling him or kind of giving him up, so to speak, in order for their own benefit. You've got the woman that's caught up in all of this. And is she part of the scheme or is she just, kind of a victim of circumstance? And a lot of this is told in flashback that's got this kind of hard-bitten dialogue. And so that kind of narrative structure is somewhat at odds with the Chinese neorealism of the way that these characters are portrayed. And then that's at odds with this really heightened style that really values kind of bold colors over everything else. So this is a really strange movie, and it's hard to describe. I have to say that in terms of that plot, I was never totally sure as it started getting more and more complicated. I was never totally sure who was who and who had double-crossed who. And if I had to take a test on which gang was involved with which person, I don't think I could pass it.
But that in itself is noirish, because the big
that's sleep, true.
Who killed whom, you know?
Right. The Raymond Chandler, who wrote The Big Sleep, famously couldn't explain the plot of The Big Sleep when he was pressed on it later. So yeah, it's in keeping with that. And so I think this is really about style over everything else. I suppose there might be, because all of these films coming out of countries that have had, you know, difficulty getting films made in the past because of, you know, the government and censorship, there's always something going on beneath the surface that's a commentary on the country itself. I don't know enough about Chinese politics to kind of examine that, but I'm sure there's more going on beneath the surface for people in China who would understand it better.
And I think that if you look at, as you pointed out, it's the visuals that capture us. And I still have images of these sort of misty scenes at night. because a lot of the action happens, you know, in this sort of chiaroscuro world of brightness and then darkness and so forth. And Nathan, you're right. We cannot fully appreciate what's going on, but at the same time, I think any of us who have awareness or visited China know that the CCP is in charge of everything. And so as a result, we have to understand that some of this is sort of playing out on multiple levels. But I really appreciated the acting performances of both of the lead actors here, especially the woman who plays Lu, because her part, you know, is to be mysterious, is to be vulnerable, for us not to know which side she's on. And I think as a result of that, playing a character such as she does in this film is probably one of the more difficult things that one can do.
Yeah, and I think that I want to go back and point out the providential part of this, that this was Wuhan that has become a part of the news because it is where the supposedly where, I mean, all indications are that's where the COVID-19 virus began. And this, the characters talk about the lawlessness of surrounding the areas, particularly Wild Goose Lake that is just outside Wuhan. That is so coincidental. It's eerie. The other thing I wanted to talk about too is, Nathan, when we were talking about the style, one of the things that really impressed me was the framing of some of the shots. And I had said to you, I think in an email, that it reminded me of some Michelangelo Antonioni films. There'll be a shot in which Zhu is looking off in one direction and Lu is looking off in another, and they're not talking to each other, yet they are talking to each other, and it's up to us to put them together. And
or a lot of shots around the corners and things such as that.
Exactly.
And there's sort of a
stairwells.
Yeah, there's sort of a dreamlike quality to it as well. And the Wild Goose Lake of the title comes into play more in the second half of the story. And there's an entire sequence where characters are sort of meeting in secret and exchanging things, and then meeting with other people and exchanging more things. And so we're kind of trying to follow that narrative juggling act. And while all of that is going on, there's sort of like almost a circus that seems to be going on, or some kind of carnival. So there's this like Fellini-esque kind of carnival thing going on as well.
Right. And that's, weren't you referring to that when there's the scene in which Liu, our bathing beauty, is moving and she jumps into this kind of dance with this whole crowd of people and then gradually works her way out of it. And it's just accepted as this is what's happening.
And there's another moment where the two of them are sort of talking amidst a hall of mirrors is the best way I can describe it. And so that kind of fractal thing where talking about how sometimes people are looking at each other, but they don't seem to be looking at each other. That's further compounded by the fact that they're looking at reflections of one another. And I think that that underlines the themes in the story of kind of multiple identities and about trust and whether this guy can trust this woman who has essentially been assigned to help him out, but maybe she has something more going on. It all comes together in the last couple of scenes, which also involves a police officer and the dance that those two characters do, the woman and the cop, is also pretty interesting.
Well, and we start to find out a little bit more about maybe what Zhu has actually done, because at first, when we encounter him, we almost feel sorry for him because all these people are after him and so forth. But then we see sort of, you know, the extent of his so-called criminality and so forth. And so that sort of changes our perspective. The lake is a character in this film for sure. And I thought some of the scenes, because we are dealing with sex workers here, at least in part, who ply their trade, so to speak, in this vicinity. And Liu is struggling with sort of her place in this whole setup and arrangement. But there are these shots in these rowboats that are simultaneously horrifying because of what is happening, or because there people are partying on in the alternative. And so that is sort of adds to the languid character of some of the scenes in contrast to these like sort of action shots and chase scenes and so forth. Yeah. So it was a really interestingly paced film, in my opinion.
Yeah. And there's also, I think, the final sense of noirishness is the ironic ending. I mean, I'm not so sure that the filmmaker earns that sense of irony. He earns well enough, you know, how the movie ends. But it is an interesting ending. It does, it makes us question much of what happened beforehand. And I think ultimately we all three really liked this movie, even given what might be presumed some of its faults.
Yeah, I mean, I think above all else, it's just real pretty to look at.
And that was The Wild Goose Lake, which we saw courtesy of a streaming site offered through the Magic Lantern Theater. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts in Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Sorry We Missed You and the HBO film Bad Education. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
What's your social distancing routine? Online meetings with coworkers? FaceTime with your grandkids? Wash your hands? If part of your routine involves tuning in to Spokane Public Radio for news, entertainment, music, and more, then I'd like you to add one more thing to your list. Make a donation today. The most important thing you can do to support Spokane Public Radio is to become a sustaining member. Thank you for being a part of our community. We couldn't do it without you. Become a member today, or make an extra donation at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Now go wash your hands again, just to be safe.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Chinese noir, The Wild Goose Lake. Let's now move to a couple of movies arguably as dark, though far different in theme and style. The first is the latest from social critic Ken Loach, Sorry We Missed You, and the second, an HBO-produced look at a based-on-real-events case of embezzlement and fraud titled Bad Education. Let's begin with a look at the lives of a British family just trying to survive in an economic situation in which they're treated with barely a shred of humanity. If you're at all familiar with the work of Ken Loach, you know that he sympathizes with society's downtrodden, the working stiffs who struggle just to make ends meet as they strive to find a balance between actual survival and some small sense of everyday satisfaction. The Turner family of Northern England, which consists of worker man Ricky and his caregiver wife Abby, and their two children, the rebellious teen Seb and the preteen angel Liza Jane, are classic examples. Still battered by the previous economic downturn, which dried up all his construction-type jobs, Ricky takes a chance on becoming a franchise delivery driver. Can you say Amazon.com? While he faces the new world of strict deadlines and hard-to-manage protocols, Abby spends her own long days feeding, clothing, and cleaning up after her various charges. Seb complicates everything by refusing to play along with what he sees as a non-future, and Liza Jane is the witness of what promises to be a disaster. That Loach doesn't show what must inevitably happen, but only points the way, doesn't make his message any less poignant or powerful or dark.
And maybe some emphasis on the last. Just to be frank, Dan and I put off watching this particular film. I mean, we're always eager to see a Ken Loach film, but we just weren't in the right mindset because we sort of knew what we were going to be getting, and this film did not disappoint. Now, having said that, you know, it opens up with our protagonist who's just sick and tired of working for the man, deciding to become part of this trucking and delivery franchise. And so he's going to be his own boss. Of course, we know right away that that's not going to come to fruition in the way that he plans or expects. And so we watch our worst fears happen as a result of, you know, his, first of all, having to buy his own truck in order to deliver these packages, selling his wife's car in order to accomplish that, which leaves her to take the bus to go to her various clients who she is a home healthcare worker and aide. And so we can see the sort of the tension that that whole scenario brings into their marriage and their course of dealing with one another. And then they have the completely checked out disaffected teenage son and the younger daughter who's trying and hoping against hope to make a success of her school life and so forth and so on. And I think the thing that is so challenging about these Ken Loach movies is the fact that they're true. I mean, this is not a documentary, but it could be. And we see how to this one family, if one thing goes awry, if one thing just slips, even momentarily, everything cascades behind it and creates turmoil and discontent and problems, just as we hope against hope, these things are not going to happen. At the same time, I really liked the way that the members of the Turner family dealt with one another. That felt real most of the time. There are a couple of little scenes that felt a little bit more orchestrated. I'm not sure that people would have had the wherewithal under the circumstances to have these sort of in-depth, brutally raw, naked emotion kind of conversations. But for the most part, if you're prepared and you know what you're getting into, it's of course, a Ken Loach film well worth watching.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the series of inconveniences or missteps or however you want to characterize them, just leading to more. I mean, that snowballing effect that happens, these people that are in a hole and can't dig themselves out. I mean, that's kind of a running theme in Ken Loach's work. In this one, Sorry We Missed You, I would liken probably to, if I want to pick another one of his movies to compare it to Riff Raff, which is a movie from the early 90s about a construction crew and sort of the,
exactly,
you know, the problems that they have on a particularly difficult site. And yeah, I mean, this is a movie about how being a working class person or being somebody who's expected to do a lot of grunt work, how it's kind of just a series of small indignities. There are all these things that this guy has to do in order to meet the demands that the employer asked of him, which are pretty much impossible. He's running. He's physically running from place to place. At one point, he brings his daughter along with him so that she can go and do a delivery while he does another one. He can't even stop to take bathroom breaks. And there's a moment where another one of his colleagues gives him a plastic bottle and says, "You're going to need this." And of course, we've heard reports from the floor of, say, an Amazon facility where that's happening. So yeah, like you said, this is a really difficult movie and it ends in a place that is much darker than not. But yeah. I also think that, like you said, if you're prepared for this, this is an important film. And I want to say that Ken Loach is the perfect filmmaker for our times, but I think he's the perfect filmmaker for all of our times. I think that this story will probably always be relevant, sadly.
Yeah, sadly. And that was Sorry We Missed You, another film streaming through the Magic Lantern website. Let's close with Bad Education. Based on real-life circumstances, which took place in the early 2000s and involved a New York school superintendent embezzling millions of dollars from his own school district, Bad Education could have been played many ways. Director Corey Finley, working from a script that was taken largely from a New York Magazine article, chose to make his version a character study. That version leaves Hugh Jackman to play the man, Frank Tassone, as a preening, glad-handing, perennially smiling sociopath living a duplicitous life while taking advantage of the people who were willing to trust him as long as he made them and their kids look good. Jackman, a multi-talented actor who hasn't always made the best career choices, is an inspired casting choice, as were Allison Janney and Ray Romano, of course. But it is Jackman, whose demeanor only gradually cracks as investigators close in, that Finley's camera loves the best.
Well, you describe him as a sociopath, but I mean, we don't know that for a lot of the movie. At least I didn't. I wasn't familiar with the story. I didn't even really know what this was about before I started watching it. And I would liken it to Steven Soderbergh's film, The Informant, which is one of my favorite comedies of the last decade or so, which is a film in which you're following a person, they're your protagonist, and you think that they're a whistleblower, essentially. And then you find out about halfway through that they were just as much of a scam artist as everybody else. And the movie has kind of kept that secret from you. And this movie, Bad Education, does that similarly. And I agree with you that Hugh Jackman is the reason to watch this. I mean, he's so good in both modes as this guy who really cares about the kids that he's overseeing, but is also willing to completely sell them out if it means that he can benefit in some way. So I actually like this a lot. We should say that it's an HBO film. So if you have HBO, you can watch this whenever you want.
And I think that attention to detail in the sort of set design and so forth, I mean, you did feel as though you were living during this time period. And I really appreciated that. Also, it was my understanding, and maybe I got this wrong, I thought I read somewhere that the screenwriter actually had been a student in that school district.
Yeah, I read that also. Yes.
Oh, wow.
And so that's kind of entertaining. Of course, Allison Janney, I would watch her, listen to her always and always. But Ray Romano was a real surprise here too, because he plays this sort of low-key part, not funny in any way. And so the whole ensemble cast is good. But really, Nathan, as you point out, the focus is truly on the Hugh Jackman character.
And let's face it, he has not made the best choices. When he's good, he's really good. But strangely enough, in my view, we should do a whole show on this sometime. He was the Wolverine. That was what Hugh Jackman was born to play. He was amazing as the Wolverine. But in other movies like Australia and Kate and Leopold,
and
other movies,
like The World's Greatest Showman, that much, which everyone else liked.
But yet he sings and dances. The guy can do anything, but he hasn't done a whole lot that I've liked. But I really did like him in Bad Education.
And I want to say I like the fact that all of the dominoes come tumbling down because of a student journalist.
Yeah.
A high school journalist starts looking into this story and breaks it. And so I like that a lot.
Yeah. And that was Bad Education. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed The Wild Goose Lake and Sorry We Missed You. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you too, our loyal listeners. And we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again try to point out the best in what's streaming. Until then, remember these words from that Greek sage, Socrates: he who is not contented with what he has would not be contented with what he would like to have. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.